Welcome to Mav Geeks, a military aircraft obsession with me, Ginny Carlin.
And me, Jamie Gordon. If you've never listened before, where have you been? In a nutshell, Ginny and I are enthusiastic amateurs, aka obsessive plane spotters, who are lucky enough to speak to the real experts every week.
I like that, Jamie. I like that a lot. I like the, my name's Ginny Carlin and I'm an obsessive spotter. We should start a help group, mate.
I suppose we really have already, haven't we? Anyway, listen, tell us about your aviation week. Anything in particular blown your skirt up?
Oh my gosh, two words, Jamie. SpaceX, I'm pretty sure it's blown your skirt up as well. That super heavy booster which flew itself back to the gantry at the launch pad. You must have seen it. It's been all over social media. It was like the gantry was there with its arms open. That huge booster came back. The gantry went, come here, you. Kind of gave it a little hug, grabbed it and brought it in. And it was like the stuff of science fiction. I mean, that has got to have blown your mind, Jamie.
It was like watching an episode of Star Trek. I don't know. I mean, the technology that is around at the moment is extraordinary. And I've been looking a lot on Twitter about this. And so many people are saying that this is an absolute game changer. This is basically the starting point where we will eventually go where we've never gone before. So, yeah, I mean, congratulations to SpaceX. Whatever you think of Elon Musk, you know, the technical challenges involved in this are just extraordinary. So well done to that team. And it was just surreal to look at, wasn't it?
Oh my gosh. I tell you what I can't stop thinking about, Jamie, is like aviation technology, not just aviation technology as well, over sort of the last 120 years where the Wright brothers started off with their first flight. And then a few decades later, then you've got the Second World War and just the technology there that was developed. And then we kind of just fast forward. It was like we were on a galloping horse forward to the Apollo. I mean, Apollo was in the 1960s, just kept going and going. I cannot believe how quickly technology has got us to this point. It's like we're just stood there. It's technology's world. We are just living in it. And now think back to the Apollo boosters, the space shuttle boosters, which fell off in the sea and they went and retrieved them. Now these boosters are coming back, like literally, oh, catch me, catch me. It just blows my tiny mind, Jamie.
I mean, it took us, what, hundreds and thousands of years to create fire. And look what we've, like you say, what we've done in the last 5 minutes in terms of the timescale is we've gone from basically the Wright brothers to what we saw this week. It's absolutely amazing. And what a joy to be alive at this time.
It certainly is. Another reason it's a joy to be alive, Jamie, is because of Al Bridger. Now, Al Bridger, if you think back...
That is not a sentence I expected.
Seriously, Al Bridger, Series 4, I've got to say, Jamie, Al Bridger has always brought us a great amount of joy because he's A, the nicest man in the world, B, he was a Phantom pilot, which I know has given you a big smile, and lastly, he has flown 747s, 777s for a major airline for a long, long time and absolutely loves it. Well, we had him on in Series 4, I think it was, and I got to sit in the simulator with him and he was just so gracious. I went all over the Heathrow grass, you know, trying to get onto the runway.
Remember it well, yeah.
It was brilliant. But Al's just released a book on airline food and we need to get him back on because he's been talking about, you know, that golden age when you think back and you think those big wide-bodied jets, stewards and stewardesses who would like carve a leg of lamb at the side of you. And I cannot wait to see this book. I cannot wait to see these recipes. I can't wait to see Al.
That's another sentence I never thought I'd hear you say about Al Bridger cooking, basically doing a cookbook of airline food. I hope you get a copy for it. I hope you get it signed and we should do something about it.
I just can't wait to see Al. What an absolute legend. But let's get on with today's episode. Do you know, Jamie, I think this is a really special one. We're not actually looking at an aircraft, but we're looking in on something. I feel like it's a little peek into something very, very special. Something that has really saved and changed a lot of lives in the aviation world. Today is all about the Martin Baker escape system. What do you think, Jamie?
This is quite close to home for me, actually, because I may have bored you in the past that I was lucky enough to get a flight in the Phantom in Cyprus many, many years ago. That same jet that I flew in just a few weeks later crashed into the Bay of Limassol, and it's still there as far as I'm aware. Now, the two guys who were in that, I knew quite well because they were part of 19 Squadron, who I'd done a documentary about, and that's why they took me flying. So when we got the news there being the accident, I mean, you kind of feared the worst. But I remember vividly, on the pan when they came back in, having been rescued, I remember being in the mess that night or the night afterwards, toasting Martin Baker, because that's what you do when a successful ejection happens. So yeah, it's pretty close to me, this one, and that's why we were chuffed to speak to Tony Gaunt, who is the business development executive at Martin Baker Escape Systems.
Tony, thank you so much for joining us today. It's really great to have you here. I need to start off our little chat just by asking, could you give us a kind of a potted history of Martin Baker for people who perhaps don't know, and that includes me?
Okay, that's fairly easy. And hi, I'm glad to be joining you. So potted history, we started making aircraft way back in 1929, and the company started as Martin Aircraft Works. Then in 1934... We rebadged to Martin Baker, and there's a hyphen between Martin and Baker, which is really important because we obviously with aircraft we needed somebody to fly them. So our test pilot was Captain Valentine Baker, and Valentine Baker and James Martin became best of friends, and so that's how the name Martin and Baker came together. Unfortunately, Baker was killed in 1942, test flying MB3, and it had such an effect on James Martin that he approached the Ministry of Supply, as it was then, now as we all know, Ministry of Defence. They basically asked us and another company, ML Aviation, to devise an escape system, and we tendered for the work and got the job. And in 1944, we were selected to manufacture escape systems for the ministry. Since then, we've manufactured thousands of seats. And we had our first life saved in 1949. A chap called Joe Lancaster ejected from an AW-52 flying wing. The seat he was using then was a prototype Mark 1 seat. So it was the first live ejection we've had. And it was our first life saved, and it was a fantastic advert for the ministry, who was still thinking of selecting seats, and that was how we got into it. And we're now up to Mark 18 seats and still looking further ahead.
So can you give us a bit of a noddy's guide as to how the ejection seat and as part of the escape system actually works?
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously seats have moved on a long, long way. So from Joe Lancaster, he had one firing handle that was above his head, and he pulled that handle, and all that did was fire cartridges, got him out of the aeroplane, and he then had to release himself from the seat. He then had to deploy his own parachute. These days, the occupant has a firing handle between the legs, and essentially it fires an initiator cartridge that will fire a main gun cartridge. That will then start the movement of the seat. As the seat moves, it unlocks, and it operates trip rods. Once the seat is slowed and stabilized, the barostatic time release unit will operate and release the occupant from the seat, depending on G and altitude.
Just because I flew in a Phantom in 1990, and I remember the safety brief I got from the seat absolutely terrified me, because at that point, you had to manually intervene once you'd been banged out of the jet. Is that now not the case? Is it a much more automated system for fifth generation jets, for example?
Well, I don't know who briefed you, but that's not necessarily true. So thank goodness you didn't need to pull the handle. So in the seat you would have flown, it would have been a Mark 7 seat, an HA-7. And essentially, there's a lot of safety devices on there. But essentially, once you've pulled the handle, everything should be automatic. And in fact, going way back to our Mark 2 seats in the 50s, was fully automatic. The only intervention you would have had to have done as if there'd been a failure and you had to manually separate. So, but from now on, it's all fully automatic, and to the point with our latest seats, the F-35 seat, the F-35B, has the capability of auto-eject, where you don't even need to pull the handle. It has two lift fans, and if one of the lift fan fails, the aircraft can flip so quickly that we deem it that the human reaction time would not be quick enough to pull the handle, so it will automatically eject you. Everything is automatic.
Maybe they were winding up a civvy then, I don't know.
Probably.
The only thing you need to listen to is when he said eject, you pull the handle. You don't need to hear it twice, just hear it once.
Yeah.
So just following on from Jamie's question, when people do have to use the escape system, it can't be a genteel thing. It doesn't look particularly genteel being ejected out of an aircraft at that speed. What do people who actually have to use the system, how do they say it feels like? What's the egress like?
Ejection, you're talking about 18 to 20 G per second. It's vicious. So you'll go from zero, let's say zero, so zero height, zero speed, in a matter of fractions of a second, you will be at 200 to 300 feet. So it's quite vicious. You don't want to just do it for a bit of fun. Alton Towers has nothing that comes close to it.
Oh, I was just going to ask that. Wow.
Just looking at some of the stories on your company's website, there's some absolutely standout ones. Is there anything that you can think of off the top of your head which personifies and shows what this system does for people in a kind of personal way?
That's easy. I mean, to be fair, every one of our ejections and life saved is an amazing feat, and it's something we're very proud of. And our current scores are up to 7,728 lives saved. And what a lot of people neglect to think about is that's the tip of the iceberg, because it's 7,728 families, so husbands, wives, brothers and sisters who've been affected. So it's massive. It's something we're hugely proud of. But there is one standout ejection that I can think of. Unfortunately, both parties were severely injured. But you may or may not know, I helped John Nicol with the technical information on his book Eject, Eject. And one of the stories in there, and it's definitely worth the listeners having a read of the book, is the story of Kate Saunders and her pilot, Ash Stevenson. Basically, Kate was in the back of a Harrier. Essentially, they had a bird strike, and a black-headed gull went through the front screen, knocked Ash Stevenson out, just totally wiped him out. His mouth was cut open. He was knocked unconscious, which left Kate in the back, who was a qualified solo pilot, but not in fast jets. So she just kept it straight and level, and Ash came around. He started getting control, realized that they were in big trouble. Because all his mask, everything was smashed, he couldn't communicate with Kate in the back. He couldn't speak to her. There was no what we call command ejection. So he couldn't pull the handle and launch her. He just had to make the decision. I'm going to have to eject first in the front, which you don't do when you've got a rear person. And hope she realizes that he's gone, I've got to get out. And that's what they did. Unfortunately, they both got out. They're both alive and well. But unfortunately, Kate came down in the fireball and was severely burnt. I think 28% burns, severely burnt. And I met her at the book launch of the Eject Eject book, and fantastic characters, the pair of them. And that's a standout an occasion and something I'll be proud to have met the pair of them.
Gosh. And just to say for the back of that as well, I mean, if people have not looked at the Martin Baker website, those stories, like you said, Jamie, just absolutely inspirational, proper lump in the throat stuff of people with real gratitude that they've got to see their kids go to graduation and they've got to see their grandchildren grow up just because of this escape system, which is just phenomenal. For you, Tony, that must give you like a really good feeling.
It does. And I could add to that one. We do a lot of shows, Farnborough, Riyadh and Paris and a lot of the shows around the world. And every time we usually get at least one ejectee, usually a few, who come over and they shake our hands and they just say, thank you for saving my life. And quite often they have children with them and say, if it wasn't for your seat, they wouldn't be here. This is my daughter. She wouldn't be here. This is my son. He wouldn't be here. So it's very humbling, but it's something we're hugely proud of.
What a massive amount of job satisfaction. Just talking about the company itself, I mean, Martin Baker seems to be synonymous with these systems with ejection seats, but how far around the world do you spread? Are you pretty much everywhere?
So essentially we cover 82 countries around the world, so obviously far too many to mention, but probably we cover some obscure ones, and the most obscure one that I've been to and carried out training at is Burkina Faso in West Africa. We go to some very, very random places.
Excellent. Now, Tony, just can you kind of give us an idiot's guide to how you actually test the escape systems?
Yeah, well, first of all, I don't personally test them. I'm short enough. I don't need to be any shorter.
I was going to say, do they sit you in a seat, Tony? No, no, sorry, go on.
So way, way back, we used to have live subjects who did the testing. So there's a chap called Benny Lynch, who there's a bit of conjecture about how many ejections, but I have it in good authority. He did 31 live ejections, and 17 of them were airborne. So a very, very brave man. He used to be a fitter on the shop floor, and the story goes that he used to like a drop of whiskey. But now health and safety have got involved. So we have a test site over at Chargrove at the M40 around junctions between Junction 6, Junction 7, where we fly 2 Meteor aircraft so we can do our flight testing. So we have our own Meteor with a Mark 10 seat in there. Our pilot flies, and he initiates the ejection sequence and launches the seat out of the back. We do sled testing in Northern Ireland near RAF Aldergrove in Belfast, where we operate our own sled and we can do high-speed testing. And we do ground-level testing again at Chargrove in Oxfordshire, where we'll do net testing and we just launch the seat from 0-0 and catch it in a net.
Wow.
Just one thing to add to that. If you look on YouTube, you'll see many, many ejection tests. But you may notice, or your listeners may notice, that a seat comes down on a parachute. That is not the case. That the only time you see the parachute is when the seat is being used for testing so that we can get it back in one piece, because otherwise it's just a mangled mess.
As I've alluded to earlier, the name Martin Baker synonymous with air safety, that's a lot of pressure to uphold, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's something we're hugely proud of. And we are, I think, around about the 55% of the world market now, and it's likely to get bigger because we're starting to move into the F-16 world, which didn't have our seats in previously. But there are our biggest competitor is Collins Aerospace with their ACES ejection seat. But then there are the Russians have a seat, a company called Zvezda. There's the Czech Republic, Aerovodochody. And I know your listeners will not believe what I'm going to tell them now, but the Chinese have a direct copy of one of our seats. I know they'll find that very hard to believe.
Sorry, I've got a little bit of a curveball question, if you don't mind, Tony. And that is, you were saying about that you test your escape systems in various ways. One of them out with the back of a Meteor, my ears went bang when you said that. Beautiful old aircraft. Have you got plans just to keep flying that? Or are you going to, I was going to say upgrade, but I mean, that's probably the wrong word, because how do you upgrade from such a classic pair of wings? Have you got plans for any other aircraft than the Meteor? And why keep using that one? I mean, why not? Because it's fantastic, but you know.
And it's a really good question. And first of all, you keep saying that one. We actually fly two.
Oh, right. Okay. We need to come and see you and see the Meteor, don't we? Obviously.
If you Google Martin Baker and the aircraft, you'll see both of them. And the black one, which is 638, up until October 2015, was the oldest military flying jet aircraft in the world.
Blimey.
We upgraded it, obviously. It's the ultimate cut and shut, or both of them are. Because they're a cross between a T7 and a T8. So ours are T7.5. We put a Mark 10 seat in both of them for our pilot. And the reason we still use them, we did look at Hawk. And Hawk is fantastic because it's very economical to fly. The Meteor is very, very uneconomical to fly. But the Hawk only has one engine. So if we were to have a flame out on ejection test, we haven't got another engine, whereas the Meteor has one on each wing. So, and that's the reason for it. But we have used Hunter in the past, but the Meteor has been our main test bed and is due to carry on for some time as yet.
Gosh.
Just picking up on the historical element of the Meteor, what about the future? Because the future, for all I can see, looks to be pilotless aircraft. So where does that put you and your company in 20, 25 years' time?
But obviously, I can't answer that question for the simple fact that I don't really know. But yes, unmanned vehicles are already out there. They're flying amongst us. They're dropping ordnance as we speak. there is going to come a time where the question is, do we need escape systems? But I can't see it in the immediate future, because putting complete populations in the hands of unmanned aircraft is not something I think we're really ready for yet. But it's a very good question, and it's one I'm sure the directors will be mulling over in their minds.
Is there anything else that we've not asked you about?
Well, unfortunately, I can't go out to the general public and sell them ejection seats, because I would say go out and buy one.
I'll have one that uses as a gaming chair.
A lot of people buy them off the internet, and there are companies out there that take all the black off them and chrome them and turn them into fantastic office things. But gaming chairs is one of the other uses.
I'm not surprised.
If there's any of the younger listeners out there, is to get them into engineering, and especially getting females into engineering. There aren't enough female engineers, and we need more.
Well said, Tony. Well, Tony, thank you so much for joining us. And I think when I first met you, Tony, at DSEI, and we chatted, and you were talking to me about these escape systems, your passion for what you do was absolutely evident. And it's so good to speak to you. Thank you for joining us and sharing the amazing work that Martin Baker do. And I'm not saying that as a plug. You know, I've got no skin in that particular game. But from both me and Jamie, it's really eye-opening to see just how many lives are being saved, and brilliant for the aviation community. I don't know if you've got anything to add to that, Jamie.
No, I just think it's an incredible job to have in saving people's lives. I don't think it gets too much better than that. And Tony, thank you so much for your time.
You're very, very welcome.
Do you know, Jamie, I first met Tony Gaunt in London at a big conference. There were so many defence exhibitors. Martin Baker were there. I was there with BFBS. And, I was doing bits for Mav Geeks and just generally for the radio. And I went over to him. He was so, so chatty. He had been in the RAF himself. He'd been over to the Falklands. You know, we were chatting like mad about that. So nice. But the one thing that really stuck out for me about Tony is just the love and the pride for what he does, really, and the fact that he is part of something that does save people's lives. Don't get me wrong, I'm sure that Martin Baker don't do this for nothing, but let's be honest, you must get a lot of job satisfaction when you know that you're changing lives for the better, when you know that when you look at the website and there are the people on there who have been saved by the escape system. And they're saying, this is my son who graduated this year. Thank you, Martin Baker, because of you. Then I was alive to see that. I was alive to come home to my wife. It's really quite emotional, isn't it?
It definitely puts everything into perspective as far as I'm concerned. I mean, what, me and you sit down for a certain amount of time and talk rubbish on the radio, but thoroughly enjoy it. And we know that other people do. But, you know, when you go to work every day at Martin Baker, you know that somewhere around the world, the likelihood is that whatever you've been working on that day could have contributed to saving a life and saving a family. So that is a big takeaway in a job, I would have thought.
Definitely. And the fact that they still fly two meteors, Jamie.
They do.
Can they do no wrong?
Oh, that's such a great element of that, isn't it? Brilliant. And lovely guy to talk to, Tony. So thank you very much, mate.
Brilliant. Now, if you have enjoyed the podcast and you want a little sneak peek of what's coming up, don't forget that we have Mav Geeks on air every Tuesday, 6 till 7 UK time on BFBS Radio. This is repeated on Saturday at 1 o'clock UK time. Myself and Jamie, it's a bit like speed dating, isn't it, Jamie? We just like give you a little glimpse of each lovely nugget that's coming up and then move on to the next thing, and all with a Fantastic Forces soundtrack.
And of course, if you want to hear your aviation tale, we certainly want to hear about it. Perhaps you've got recommendations or tips of people that you think we ought to be speaking to, or just stories you want to share, please do get in touch with the programme. You can email us at mavgeeks@bfbs.com. Next week, old scary pants time.
Oh my gosh, what an absolute episode we've got for you. You know what it's like, Jamie? We've got a bit of a tradition with Mav Geeks that we bring the Mav Shrieks around Halloween. I am so excited to bring, well, two absolute legendary subjects, really. First of all, Denver International Airport. I mean, how mad is that?
Just extraordinary. I mean, the more research I did into it, the more bizarre it became. The stories attached to it, the myths and the legends that have grown up around the airport. But I think we've got the absolute perfect person to, well, confirm or deny these things and just to tell us a bit about the history of Denver International Airport and why it's got such a spooky reputation.
And for me, I am a big fan of the podcast Uncanny. We are speaking to Danny Robbins. He has been described as a modern day Bram Stoker. And I know you might have seen him on the TV with Uncanny, the podcast Uncanny, the stage show Uncanny. It's absolutely brilliant. We are speaking to him about all things aviation spooky. I cannot wait, Jamie.
Me neither. I think I made it halfway through one of his programs and then I'm not good with ghosts and ghoulies. So next week I'll put my brave boy pants on and we'll see how we get on.
I can't wait to see that, Jamie. I would say I'd hold your hand, but it might be a little bit difficult.
Brilliant. Well, look forward to all of that next week. See you then.
Ta-ra.